What's up, everyone? Welcome to your weekly tech update, the show that explores the newest, coolest, and craziest side of tech available on the interwebs. I am your geek leader, Ray McNeil. Coming up on the program today, we're talking robo-ants. They can work together in swarms to navigate tricky terrain. Splinter Cell and Assassin's Creed games could be coming to the Oculus VR, and I am so excited. And happening in this week's What the... Teens wore masks during a racist graffiti spree, but then were ID'd by cell phone data connecting them to Wi-Fi hotspots. That, and even some stories we've had to cut from previous episodes due to time, all coming up on today's edition of your weekly tech update. Next. Hi everyone. While the agility of the Spot or Atlas robot is definitely something to behold, there's a special merit reserved for tiny, simple robots that work not as a versatile individual, but as an adaptable group. These tri-bots are built on the model of ants, and like them, can work together to overcome obstacles with teamwork. Developed by EPFL and Osaka University, tri-bots are tiny, light, and simple, moving more like inchworms than ants, but able to fling themselves up and forward if necessary. The bots themselves and the system they make up are modeled on trap jaw ants, which alternate between crawling and jumping, and work, as do most other ants, in fluid roles like explorer, worker, and leader. Each robot is not itself very intelligent, but they are controlled as a collective that deploys their abilities intelligently. In this case, a team of tri-bots might be expected to get from one end of a piece of complex terrain to another. An explorer could move ahead, sensing obstacles and relaying their locations and dimensions to the rest of the team. The leader then can assign worker units to head over to try to push the obstacle out of the way. If that doesn't work, an explorer can try hopping over it, and if successful, it can relay its telemetry to the others so that they can do the same thing. It's all done quite slowly at this point. You'll notice that in the video, much of the action is happening at about 16 times speed, but being quick isn't the idea here. Similar to the squishy robotic creations that we've seen, it's more about adaptability and simplicity of deployment. The little bots weigh only 10 grams each and are easily mass-produced, as they're basically PCBs with some mechanical bits and a grip point attached. A quasi-two-dimensional metamaterial sandwich, according to the paper. If they only cost, say, a buck each, you could drop dozens or hundreds on a target area, and over an hour or two, they could characterize it. Take measurements and look for radiation or hot spots and so on. Swarm-based bots have the advantage of not failing catastrophically when something goes wrong. When a robot fails, the collective persists, and it can be replaced as easily as a part. It raises the question, in fact, of whether the sub-robots themselves constitute a sort of uber-robot. This is more of a philosophical question, raised first in the case of the Constructicons and Devastator. Transformers, you know, was way ahead of its time. The robots are still in prototype form, but even as they are, constitute a major advance over other collective type robot systems. The team documents their advances in a paper published in the journal Nature, if you want to check it out for yourself. If you find that having your music in good quality, being able to skip tracks with fast forwarding, and fitting all your media onto one device is just too convenient, then we've got some good news for you. Cassette tapes are making a comeback. I'm not kidding. NINM Lab is introducing the world's first Bluetooth portable cassette player, an update of the classic Sony Walkman that will play the collection of cassette tapes you still have buried at the back of your closet. I actually just found my box of cassette tapes not too long ago. The It's Okay cassette player has Bluetooth built in, so you can listen to your cassettes on wireless headphones, or if you're a purist, or hipster, you can still use headphones. It comes in three colors, cloud white, Sakura pink, and evening blue. And the case is transparent, so you can show off your sweet mixtapes to everyone. It brings a new perspective to the romanticism of the 80s cassette player, apparently. It launched on Kickstarter recently, and you can get your hands on your very own for $63, if that's something you feel you need in your life. This is pretty cool. Years ago, MIT professor Neil Gershenfeld had an audacious thought, struck by the fact that all the world's living things are built out of a combination of just 20 amino acids. He wondered, might it be possible to create a kit of just 20 fundamental parts that could be used to assemble all of the different technological products in our world? Gershenfeld and his students have been making steady progress in that direction ever since. Their latest achievement, presented this week at an international robotics conference, consists of a set of 5 tiny fundamental parts that can be assembled into a wide variety of functional devices, including a tiny walking motor that can move back and forth across a surface or turn the gears of a machine. Custom machines that work well but are relatively expensive and inflexible, and reconfigurable ones that sacrifice performance for versatility. In the new approach, Langford came up with a set of 5mm scale components, all of which can be attached to each other by a standard connector. These parts include the previous rigid and flexible types, along with electromagnetic parts, a coil, and a magnet. In the future, the team plans to make these out of still smaller basic part types. Using the simple kit of tiny parts, Langford assembled them into a novel kind of motor that moves an appendage in discrete mechanical steps, which can be used to turn a gear wheel and a mobile form of the motor that turns those steps into locomotion, allowing it to walk across a surface in a way that it's as reminiscent of the molecular motors that move muscles. These parts could also be assembled into hands for gripping or legs for walking as needed for a particular task, and then later reassembled as those needs change. Gershenfeld referred to them as digital materials, discrete parts that can be reversibly joined, forming a kind of functional micro-Lego. The new system is a significant step towards creating a standardized kit of parts that could be used to assemble robots with specific capabilities adapted to a particular task or set of tasks. Such purpose-built robots could then be disassembled and reassembled as needed in a variety of forms, without the need to design and manufacture new robots from scratch for each application. It sounds very cool, but very ominous of some of those scary sci-fi horror movies that we've seen where robots are taking over the world. The simplicity and regularity of these structures make it relatively easy for their assembly to be automated. To do that, Langford has developed a novel machine that's like a cross between a 3D printer and the pack-in-place machines that manufacture electronic circuits. But unlike either of those, this one can produce complete robotic systems directly from digital designs. This machine is a first step towards the project's ultimate goal of making an assembler that can assemble itself out of the parts that it's assembling. Have you heard about this yet? Amazon is planning to build a 43-story tower in Bellevue, that's Washington State in the U.S., its tallest building anywhere to date, as well as the city's tallest. That would accommodate several thousand employees and signal a deeper commitment to grow in the city, where it has amassed a significant portfolio of office leases. The company recently began the formal permitting process for the proposed building, referred to as Bellevue 600. The site is the east half of the Bellevue Corporate Plaza property at 600 108th Avenue Northeast that it bought in April for $195 million. While the specifics of the proposed building may change as it undergoes review, the size outlined in the company's pre-application to the city of Bellevue suggests room for nearly 4,200 employees. Using the ratio implied by Amazon's latest Seattle tower. That project, the 650 million, 1.2 million square foot Reinvent tower, will accommodate some 5,000 Amazonians who are expected to begin moving in this month. That was from the company last week anyway. Bellevue 600 would be Amazon's first construction project in the city where the commerce giant was born nearly 25 years ago, and where it is moving an entire corporate division. The Worldwide Operations Organization, responsible for delivery and customer orders, moving to Bellevue. Amazon, since 2016, has secured a half dozen other major leases of planned or existing Bellevue offices that total about 1.8 million square feet. By 2024, the anticipated completion date of the 600 Bellevue Tower, Amazon would have enough space in the city for more than 11,000 employees. Amazon's pre-application for the new tower describes public plaza spaces and a connection to Bellevue's Grand Connection, a route for bikes and pedestrians linking the East Side Rail Corridor east of Interstate 405 with the city's downtown and Lake Washington waterfronts. Nintendo back in the news. They are releasing their latest mobile game, Dr. Mario World. And we're starting to get a better idea of what the game will look like. Nintendo dropped a trailer that reveals how the game's multiplayer mode will work. It also launched a new site with general info, like when and where you can download the game. As you'd expect, the game will make it easy to find friends on Facebook or Line. You'll be able to see their progress, send them hearts, and most importantly, challenge them to a battle. The matches will take place in real time, and as you eliminate viruses, you'll fill your attack meter. When it's full, you can sabotage opponents by sending the viruses to them. If you ever played Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo back in the day, it's pretty much like that, and I'm sure one person out there went, "Hey, I know that game!" How many viruses you send will depend on your doctor's attack power. You can hone other skills like speed and defense as well. The free-to-play game will be available on Android and iOS. Like the 90s version for the NES, SNES, and Game Boy, Dr. Mario World offers a Tetris-like experience. It may have to compete with other mobile revivals of classics like Tetris Royal, which is also in development. All sorts of revivals happening these days. Warner Media has confirmed a 10-episode series order for The Gremlins, Secrets of the Magua, a half-hour animated prequel to the original 1984 Gremlins live-action movie. The project from Amblin Television and Warner Brothers Animation has been in the works for months now with an informal green light. The animated TV adaption tells the original story of the shop owner, Mr. Wing. He's a character from the 1984 movie and its 1990 sequel, played by Key Luke, set in 1920 Shanghai. It reveals how 10-year-old Sam Wing met the young Magua called Gizmo, along with a teenage street thief named Ellie. Sam and Gizmo take a perilous journey through the Chinese countryside, encountering and sometimes battling colorful monsters and spirits from Chinese folklore, on their quest to return Gizmo to his family and uncover a legendary treasure. They're pursued by a power-hungry industrialist and his growing army of evil gremlins. Gremlins, Secrets of the Magua will be produced by Amblin Television in association with Warner Brothers Animation, divisions of the movie franchise's producers. This is the second animated series for Amblin TV, which also has Animaniacs on Hulu. Gremlins, Secrets of the Magua is part of a ramp-up at Warner Brothers, which has been greenlighting series ahead of the streaming platform's launch. Pickups include Dune, The Sisterhood, Station 11, Made for Love, Tokyo Vice, and Love Life. Los Angeles residents are able to float off into distant worlds while their aches are soothed in virtual reality with a VR massage center. It just recently opened. At the outset, the Escapes Immersive Relaxation Center, supposedly the first of its kind, will offer 10 different VR environments for you to try and relax in, including a sauna, koi pond at an oceanside resort, and a ski cabin with a crackling fireplace. The center will pump in fragrances related to each setting along with the cool breeze. The massage isn't virtual though, but it's not from a human either. It's an automated massage chair, hopefully better than the one that you collapse into for a break at the mall. Somewhat fittingly, Escapes is based in the SAG-AFTRA building. That's the home of the Screen Actors Guild, whose members certainly know a thing or two about pretend worlds. Escapes might not be able to offer you a massage from a real masseur or masseuse on an actual Caribbean beach, but as a quick getaway from the hustle and bustle of LA, it might be worth checking out. How cool does this sound? Engineers from Duke University, the U of Dub, and Intellectual Ventures Invention Science Fund have just revealed that it's possible to make a wireless charging device that can charge electronics found anywhere in a room. In their paper, the proposed device takes advantage of the Fresnel zone. It's a region of an electromagnetic field that can be focused. Together with higher microwave frequencies, this allows for the transfer of a much denser power, power that's enough to charge electronics efficiently over larger distances, unlike the conventional resonance magnetic near field found in today's wireless chargers. The problem is designing an antenna that is able to focus on any device in a room. Their solution? It relies on metamaterials, a synthetic material that's made of many engineered cells that can produce properties not found in nature. They calculated that having a flat metamaterial device no bigger than an LCD television would be the best way to design the tech. With this technology, those tangle-prone and cumbersome wires would be a thing of the past. There might soon come a day where we could charge our phones without having to stand up and move across the room, which would be great for the less able-bodied, and also the excessively lazy. And that's not all. Smith says that there are versions of his concept that can deliver power over much larger distances. If they become successful with this idea, that flat screen TV in your living room could soon be remotely charging any device within its line of sight. No word on when we might get something like this in our own home. I'm sure it'll be a few years yet, but I am so ready to make dead batteries a thing of the past. More details about the upcoming Honda E, the company's cute, compact electric vehicle. They've been revealed recently, including its 50-50 weight distribution, range, and battery capacity. We first saw a near-production prototype of the Honda E at the 2019 Geneva Motor Show. The final version will make its official debut later this year for the European market. Unfortunately, there are no plans right now, at least, to bring it to the US market. While the E is a little less funky than the original urban EV concept on which it's based, it retains most of that car's best features. Honda says its electric motor will deliver it power to the rear wheels and that the chassis features a four-wheel independent suspension. A water-cooled 35 kilowatt-hour lithium-ion battery pack stores the juice, and it can be charged via a Type 2 AC connection or a CCS2 DC rapid charger. Maximum range is stated at about 125 miles, and a rapid charger is said to deliver an 80% charge in under 30 minutes. The charging port is located on the hood and features LED lighting to highlight the battery charging status. Honda says it has already received 31,000 reservations for its compact EV from consumers in the UK, Germany, France, and Norway. We imagine it could easily increase that number if it were to bring the car to North America as well, which we think should happen in the future. Google has created a video game called Game Builder that allows you to craft simple Minecraft-style games for yourself and others to play through. The game lets you drag and drop characters and scenery into an empty sandbox to construct your world. Then you preset commands to string together how things interact. It's free to play and available on both Windows and Mac OS. It has a co-op mode, so multiple people can build the game all together, and you can also share your creation and browse through the games made by others. The interaction system works with if this, then that logic, and players can craft their own interactions with JavaScript if they're familiar with it. It's definitely a cool program, app, game, whatever you want to call it. If you want to check it out for yourself, go and check it out on Steam. Oh, this could be so cool if you fancy doing some virtual reality assassinations. Well, if a new report is to be believed, you'll soon be able to play some of the finest stealthy murder simulators on an Oculus VR headset. Now, according to the information, Oculus parent company Facebook is spending just shy of $1 billion to bring Ubisoft's Assassin's Creed and Splinter Cell games to its headsets on an exclusive basis. That'd make them available to the Oculus Rift, the Oculus Quest, and Oculus Rift S headsets, but pull them away from the HTC Vive family and PlayStation VR. We cannot comment on specific partnerships, but we will continue to focus on expanding our library and reaching broader gaming audiences for years to come, an Oculus spokesperson told the information. However, it's clear that such a move will be necessary for Facebook in order for its VR ambitions to pick up steam. The promised VR boom from Facebook's $2 billion acquisition of Oculus back in 2014 may have failed to materialize at least as quickly as we'd all expected, but the continued popularity of the PlayStation VR and Oculus's commitment to great exclusive content like Vader Immortal, a Star Wars VR series, offers hope that the best is still yet to come. And finally, happening in this week's What the... Four Maryland teenagers sneaked into their school's property the night before graduation last year and covered it in racist, homophobic, and anti-Semitic graffiti. The Washington Post described how they got caught in a Tuesday story. It says they covered their faces during the hate crime but didn't realize that their cell phones automatically connected to the school's Wi-Fi under their individual student IDs, no less. Seth Taylor, Tyler Curtis, Joshua Schaefer, and Matthew Lipp were soon arrested. Tyler said the teens meant to spray paint class of 2018 on the sidewalk as a senior prank, but things kind of got out of hand. Boy, I'd say. Sentences for the four teens ranged from 8 to 18 weekends behind bars. Thanks for watching your weekly tech update. If you have a story you think we should feature on the program, send me an email, djraymcneil@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at Your Weekly Tech Update and check out the podcast, audio and video versions available on Google, iTunes, Spotify, Audio Burst, and elsewhere on the interwebs. Till next time, I'm Ray McNeil. Good night, world. Your weekly tech update brought to you by Holiday Home Care, Phillip Island, Victoria, Australia. It's your turn to relax.